All right, everybody. I hope you are having a wonderful morning, noon, or night, wherever you guys are in the world. You're certainly in the right place because today we are joined by an expert here in the crypto space. We're also joined, as always, by my notorious compadre, Mr. Aaron Pizza Mind Malone. Aaron, how are we doing? I know you said you got a terrible night's sleep for a kind of reason that caught me by surprise.
And me too. I was kept awake by the loudest bullfrog I've ever imagined.
That's what you get for moving to Texas.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing, but apparently it is. But after this thing kept me up for hours and hours listening to it croak outside, I finally was able to change my perspective. And this thing actually was able to lull me to sleep, finally. It's kind of like how we're looking at this bear market and these falling prices, you know? At first,
just get
keeping
used to
you up. Yeah, well, no, not just that, but you know, right now, at first, it's keeping you up at night. You're worried out of your mind. But eventually, if you look at it through the right lens, this is a great opportunity. A life-changing opportunity, in fact, for many, many people who are just getting into the crypto space. Because we're still at only maybe 2, maybe 3% worldwide adoption. There's a lot more people out there, and maybe this is their first podcast they're ever listening to, that need that life-changing opportunity, that need a way out.
You know, we've been through a couple bear markets at this point, one of them together, one of them separate. And, you know, what we're so excited about is just this concept of building, right? I mean, during the bull markets, people are just trading, flipping coins, going berserk. Everybody can't put their phone away. And kind of during these times where there's a washout, there's a lull in the market, a really interesting thing happens. And it's the new technology platforms get formed, right? They get a strong foundation. And one of the newest sort of, you know, call it technological underpinnings of the crypto market right now, that's really being born in the bear market, is called zero knowledge proofs and ZK snarks. And we're going to dive into basically how this technology is, creating privacy in applications and privacy in transactions. So we're going to bring on an expert today to join us. We've got Alex Pruden, who is the COO of Aleo. So Alex, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and thank you for coming with the energy, with a good microphone. You'd be surprised at some people, they come on and they just don't have a microphone.
I'm ready for this. I prepared.
Good. And you do these things often. So we're gonna go ahead and dive straight into your background. Let's get acquainted here with the good citizens of Crypt Nation. They're at home. They're driving to work. Maybe they're doing their thing. Alex, how'd you get into the crypto space?
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you asked. And I maybe will linger on this question a little bit longer, just because this is the Crypto 101 podcast, and I had no technical background at all before getting into the space, and I was as far away from the crypto industry as well as tech as you can imagine. So I started my career in the U.S. Army. So I was an Army officer. I served for 10 years, started in the infantry, and then I was working in special forces. And
thank you for your service.
I appreciate it. Yeah. But I discovered Bitcoin in the Middle East. So I was deployed to the Middle East at one of my last deployments. And we were working in Turkey, and we were working with the Syrian folks, many of whom had been refugees. And so we were kind of training them to fight ISIS at the time. And several of them had lost everything in the course of the civil war and when they had become refugees. So people at the time, I was naive to how the global financial system works. You know, as an American, it's easy to just get used to the fact that you can go to anywhere in the world and pull dollars out of an ATM. But, you know, if you're a Syrian refugee fleeing conflict and you end up in Turkey, you can't just pull your life savings out of a bank in Turkey. You have to go back and risk
your life.
Your money's no good here, and you have to go back and risk your life to potentially get those assets. And that was in the context in which I discovered Bitcoin. And the idea for me that was really powerful was this notion of a bank account in your head. So I just had my first kid, decided I didn't want to pursue the military anymore, but I really wanted to investigate this idea. So I was like, okay, well, what do I do? I knew nothing. I couldn't code. I knew nothing about anything technical, and was fortunate to get the chance to attend Stanford University and get the for my MBA. But I wasn't, the MBA was interesting, but I was really interested in some of the technical aspects and getting smart technically on the space and learning more about crypto and blockchain specifically. And so long story short, I just took classes, did online workshops, listened to podcasts like this one for years and years and years. And, you know, it's funny, you call me an expert, but I just want everybody to know who's listening to this podcast that at one point I was as amateur as you can possibly be. And you would be amazed the degree to which the amount that you can learn bit by bit, day by day over time. And I completely echo what you said about the bear market. This is the best time to learn because it's much easier to cut through what a lot of times is just noise and really get the signal. So I guess finishing up my background quickly. So I did 2 years at Stanford University. I had the fortunate opportunity to study cryptography under a professor there, which is what really kind of launched my career into the crypto industry. So the professor was a gentleman named Dan Bonet. He was an advisor to A16Z. And I had a couple part-time jobs in crypto, but Dan introduced me to the folks at A16Z and ended up taking a role at A16Z Crypto. I was one of the first people to join A16Z Crypto in 2019. And did that for 2 years as an investor. So I saw a lot of projects. It's actually amazing. I saw many of the projects that are now titans in the industry. I remember their first, the initial pitches that I saw when they were just raising up their first round.
Wow.
But decided to, I really wanted to be an operator. I wanted to build something myself. And I found a project called Alio, which is where I still currently am the COO. And it was being built by several folks who were very strong on the research side in this concept of zero knowledge proofs. And Alio is really taking zero knowledge proofs and turning it into something that you can build applications on. So I'll stop there. But anyway, it's a pleasure to be here. And like I say, this is a great chance, hopefully, for some of your guests to learn a thing or two about anything. Like I said, crypto is one of the fun things about the crypto industry is that there's no experts because, it's like, it's so wide ranging, from like the economics, the game theory, even politics when it comes to DAOs, cryptography, whatever. So looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, that's an amazing origin story. And we love asking that question because everyone's is so different. If you've been in this space and survived basically for 3 years or more, like you're a de facto expert for all the things that you've learned. And the funny thing is, in this space, we always ask each other, what year did you get in as a way of kind of calculating all the different battle scars that you had to undergo and survive in order to still be here today. So that's hilarious. What exactly does a COO do? What is your daily responsibilities and tasks over there at Alio?
I ask myself that question every day. kidding aside. So my role is really to set conditions and enable the engineering team and the product team to focus on building the best product and the best quality engineering. I think that's really, if I had to boil it down, that's what it comes down to. So I do a little bit of everything as a result of that. It's also a fact of, being a COO at a startup, I would say, is much different than being a COO, I imagine, of like Ford Motor Company, where it's like roles are much more defined. At a startup, I joined, I was the first non-founder to join Alio. I mean, there's just 10 times more work than there are people. So everybody does a little bit of everything. So I've done everything from product management. So I led we did a setup ceremony where we got a bunch of people to contribute to the cryptographic protocol. I led that effort. So I was kind of a product thing. I do operations, obviously. I do a lot of the finance stuff, especially the accounting and economic planning for, what the network token will look like, the distribution of that. I manage a lot of the HR functions and kind of lead the team and help set the culture. I mean, yeah, I touch a little bit of everything, but again, the key piece for me is enabling the engineers and the folks who really lead products to just be able to focus, get heads down, and do the best work that they can.
And I think I also read that recently there was a fundraising round, close $200 million, correct me if I'm wrong, Series B, backed by guys like SoftBank Vision Fund, Samsung Next, Tiger Global, Cora Management LP, and a $1.45 billion with a B valuation. Holy smokes. Did you have a hand in that? And what was it like kind of closing that fundraising round?
Yeah. So I guess I should say that I've done, especially because I came from an investment firm, I do a lot of the investor relations and I help out on the fundraising side. It's very valuable By the way, if anyone who's is looking to get in to start a company, I will say if you ever get the opportunity to work at a VC, I mean, it's hard to come by, but if you get the opportunity, it's fantastic because you get to sit in the room where decisions to invest are made. And so it's very helpful when you're considering how to structure your own pitch. But yeah, no. So I think, yeah, I was involved in that. And in general, I think that fundraise, and we've raised like, so yeah, three rounds of funding total culminating with our Series B. And that fundraise was really, I think, a reflection of the excitement around the potential for zero knowledge cryptography, which is something we can get into more later on the show.
Yeah, let's just kind of dive straight in. And this is going to be kind of a high level question, but how do you define privacy? You know, Alio is a privacy centric network, but how, you know, everybody kind of has a different definition. What's yours?
I think for me, privacy is about, I like to think of it in terms of what do you have the ability, like what is at your discretion to share versus what are you forced to share? Because to me, like, you know, privacy implies a choice, right? Like I'm choosing to reveal this thing to you or not. I mean, just by having the choice to not reveal it, that is kind of what people think of privacy as the hidden nature of it. But I prefer to think of it as this choice that you as a user have. And I think that's really the key piece is I don't like to think of it. I mean, I obviously came to the space, as you can imagine, like working with the people that I did, like I'm very much a personal liberty guy. And that's very unimportant principle to me. But I think in terms of how I like to talk about it, especially to potential users or other people in the Web3 space, it's like privacy is a feature that gives you as a consumer a greater range of options, right? Because, you know, if you can construct applications or if you can construct a paradigm in which you as a consumer can choose what you want to share or not share, you know, that enables a whole, I think, menu of better and more more interesting applications. And by the way, this is an interesting point about crypto that's maybe worth lingering on. I mean, the traditional financial system that we're all here to kind of replace is way more private than the crypto networks that are most widely adopted today. I'm sure you guys know and have been through this on your podcast, but you know, things like, I mean, if Bitcoin, but I mean, Ethereum probably most especially. I mean, if I send you one USDC, not only do I see every NFT you've ever, you know, YOLO'd into, but I also see like every dollar or every asset you've ever sent anywhere. And then I can trace just the tree of all those payments. I can just see all your friends, your entire network, all the pay, you know, who you've paid when. I mean, it's, if you think about like how banking systems work, even though there's a lot of downsides, I mean, one of the things that is not a feature is I can't see your bank account. I don't know what bank wires you sent, you know? So I think it's something that is, to me, as we build in Web3, I think privacy is not only going to be a nice to have, it'll be a need to have, because I think for many real world economic applications, like you just don't want to reveal certain details. Now, maybe you do want to reveal them. Like there could be a case in which, you know, maybe a regulator asks you to reveal some stuff. And I think that's why it's important that privacy, you have the ability to share information if asked, if you want to, if you choose to. But I think the world of privacy by default is the right world for, you know, most applications that touch the real economy.
Absolutely. And we're being sent a very conflicting signal right now by the US government, who just sanctioned Tornado Cash, which is basically the only way to send a private Ethereum transaction at the moment. Despite Tornado Cash actually complying with OFAC sanctions list, not only was their site taken down, but one of their core developers was even arrested in the Netherlands, not even in the US. So this is a really very confusing signal for, you know, from, you know, really a body that should want privacy more than anything to protect itself against, you know, foreign invaders and other interests that, you know, don't want to play by the rules. What are your thoughts on this and what kind of message is really being sent here?
I love it. It's 20 minutes in, and the hard balls are already coming. This is good. No,
this is how we play.
This is my kind of podcast. All right. So first of all, I think the first thing to note is just the US government is, I think oftentimes we think of it as a monolithic entity, but having served in the US government, I can tell you that's like vast differences between organizations. And in some ways, like each independent agency is kind of its own entity because it's just a huge organization. And I think different agencies and different policymakers within the U.S. government have different opinions of crypto. I think it's not clear that the U.S. government is taking position one way or the other. And then even within OFAC and this the sanctions or this this ruling that you're talking about, the facts of the case are not probably available to all of us. So I think on paper, I agree. It's a bit of a disturbing development, but I also think there's maybe other facts of the case that'll get litigated. I'm sure this will be a case that's taken up in a higher court at some point because of the precedent that it's breaking, and really the precedent for people who aren't aware of the jurisprudence around law and tech. There was this principle that was kind of enshrined in the 90s. It was this idea that code is speech, right? And so this was actually, in addition to arresting this developer, there's GitHub and some of these other, you know, infrastructure providers took down code that was relating to the work on Tornado Cash. And this is
a violation of the First Amendment.
And that because of the jurisprudence code of speech, this could potentially be a violation of the First Amendment, which is why I think this is going to be decided in a higher court. And I think that's great. That's like, you know, this is one of the nice things. I mean, this is one reason I'm proud to be an American as opposed to living in an authoritarian country, is because we have a way to appeal this decision. We can discuss it and there's a system. And hopefully, you know, if everything works right, we'll get, you know, we'll have a transparent decision made about it. But look, I think what you said is right. I think there's many, many reasons why the U.S. government does care about privacy, right? It's the same reason. It's like the example I love to use about even one government agency that kind of is, it's sort of schizophrenic is the NSA. It's the NSA, for those who don't know, is the National Security Agency. They're kind of like the super secret shadow hackers of the U.S. government. Their job is to break into everyone's networks, but their job is also to defend our networks. And the funny thing about cryptography is it's very symmetric, right? Like if there's a vulnerability that you can exploit, it's guaranteed that that vulnerability exists for others to exploit, right? And so there's this weird dual mandate to do both. And I think in this case, with regards to privacy, look, there's obvious, like no one wants to fund, and least of all me, like, look, I spent 10 years fighting terrorism in the Middle East, right? No one wants to fund bad people. But at the same time, there's of course a million different ways that having technology like Tornado Cash or like a privacy preserving platform does provide utility to the real world financial system. And I think the key thing that I hope that we as an industry can do is show not just regulators, but just users, people in general, like the utility, like what are use cases for this tangibly today that we can interact with? And like, how does this help regular people, not North Korea, right? I think that's something, in my personal opinion, that Tornado Cash got wrong, is they kind of just said, here's the thing, it's out there, use it for whatever you want. And unfortunately, because they didn't really develop use cases for it directly, it ended up kind of by default becoming the vector by which allegedly North Korean hackers used to launder money.
And so, you know, my hope is that, you know, this, you know, I hope it does go to these higher courts and it does get sussed out. And again, we don't know the whole thing, right? There's more than meets the eye, and you could just kind of look at something and say, oh my God, well, this is totally wrong. But you don't, like, nobody knows who this guy really was, if he was doing other things on the side, all that kind of stuff. So it's just, you know, we'll wait to see how the court proceedings go. And, you know, I think that, you know, something like Alio hopefully has, you know, a different future, obviously. And I think one of the points that you mentioned was that, you know, there's application specific design, and not just like, okay, just open it up for anybody to use. But tell us a little bit about how Alio is different from something like a Tornado Cash.
Yeah. So Alio is a general platform for applications powered by zero knowledge. So what that means is you can define just arbitrary logic and just like you can write any smart contract and deploy it to the Ethereum blockchain, here you can write any logic and deploy that to Alio. And so this is a platform now where developers can write applications, and these applications are deployed in something on Alio called a program registry. That program registry is what users use and what we call provers use to synthesize transactions. So one thing to note, maybe on the technical side of Alio, is that we have this model that's slightly different than Ethereum. You have an on-chain, like programs and transactions are verified on-chain, but they're run off-chain. So it's a little bit more scalable because of that. But what that means is you need the code, basically the smart contract, available in this program registry for everybody to reference. And then they send transactions that reference a piece of code, the contents of which may or may not be hidden. Again, with Alio, the principle that we aim to achieve is privacy by default. but users and developers both retain the ability to reveal selectively any information that they want to, which is a really important piece because I think that's what I believe enables people to comply with the law. Look, like I said, I've been in a lot of places where the rule of law wasn't strong or arbitrarily was, or maybe even stated strongly, more strongly was bad. But I think it's important. I think we as human, and maybe this is like a meta philosophical comment for a second, like we as humanity have gotten to the point where like we view having governments and societies and laws in general as a good thing, I think. And I think it's important that any system that we build, and a financial system especially, has the ability to be compliant. Now, look, just like the internet, Web3 and blockchains are a tool that can be used for good or bad. I mean, all technology has this character. How it's used, I think, is different than the fundamental character of it. But I think the important thing is that with Alio, you can, it's possible to build all kinds of applications, but it's most especially possible to build applications that could be compliant with whatever regulatory regime you're operating under as a developer. And I think, so that's really important. And I actually think that something like Alio is exactly what you would want for example, if the US government wanted to issue a central bank digital currency, right? Because again, like you don't, if you're trying to reinvent the banking system, you don't want everybody to see everyone else's transfers. So you want kind of privacy between everybody, but you want to make sure like, okay,
people in government certainly don't want everybody knowing how they're moving their money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
money's moving into them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So there's like, I mean, there's reasons to have like a system like this. And so I'm very confident that, and this is why, by the way, like the Federal Reserve is researching zero knowledge proofs for this exact reason.
So have you guys ever heard this? Look, you know, sell your crypto. How about get out, cut bait, and run? We're headed for a cliff. Have you guys heard this? I mean, I've heard all of it, but don't get mad at me because I'm not the guy going around saying this. That's actually what the chief strategist at JP Morgan had been warning. And they've been the most bullish bank on crypto. So it was kind of weird to see. But now, obviously, I'm not going to be the guy who's going to be shouting, you know, sell, sell, sell. But some economists are predicting a recession next year, according to CNN. So we can't just sit around and wait. I mean, we got to make a move. So you could do what the corporate insiders are doing, like the CEO of the biggest asset manager in the world, Larry Fink. Recently, he was talking about contemporary art, okay? And he called this the new gold. And the numbers are actually backing him up a little bit. And the last time inflation was this high, it was a long time ago, but contemporary art appreciated at an average of 33% annually back then. So that was beating real estate. That was beating the S&P, everything. And if there was some magical coin out there that went up 33% when inflation was kicking everybody's butts, I'd be all over it. And so that's why we're so bullish and so excited on this company called Masterworks that's sponsoring us. They've got a genius idea, okay? Because Masterworks buys paintings by legendary artists, guys like Picasso and, you know, Banksy. Okay, and enables you to invest in a portion of these iconic works for just a fraction of the full price. So they've already got over 500,000 members and over $500 million under management, believe it or not. And demand is surging. Okay, so there's also a wait list in order to get in on the platform. But here's the super cool thing. My listeners on Crypto 101 Podcast can skip to the front of the line, the little lightning pass here, by going to Masterworks.com/crypto101. Again, that's masterworks.com/crypto101. And it's also super important, guys. You got to see some Regulation A disclosures at masterworks.io/CD. And we're going to link to that disclosure in the show notes.
So you guys are using zero knowledge proofs, and that kind of seems to be the industry leader in optional privacy, as opposed to something like ring signatures or other mechanisms of privacy that are just purely private. Why did you guys decide to take that approach?
Put simply, it's just the flexibility. Like I said, I think privacy is a choice, right? So that, like, I have some information that I want to hide, but I also should retain the ability to reveal. And I think that zero knowledge, without getting in too far into the technical differences between ring signatures and zero knowledge cryptography, et cetera, I think zero knowledge cryptography enables the highest degree of flexibility for the user and for the developer. And therefore, it's more powerful of a primitive.
I love it. Now, Can you kind of, you know, just so we could put some meat on the bones here in terms of visualizing some tangibility, what are some like end user applications that are like being built on Alio right now where, you know, maybe somebody even at home could go, they could log in and they could start to utilize one of these applications? Or is it being, you know, is the whole platform still being built?
So it's still being built. So we just launched our third and final test net. We're having mainnet launch coming up later this year, early next year. And so this is, you know, it's something that is like the plane is being built as we're flying it, but we have already seeded the ecosystem with some grants. And so some of the things that people have built that are, I would say like beta is that's putting it too far. It's probably more like an alpha stage product, but some of the things that people are using this for that I think differentiate Alio from other smart contract platform like Ethereum is, for example, you can do a DAO where the voting in the DAO, you don't know how every individual voted, right? It's just like when we vote in the US, like I don't know who you voted for, right? So you can do that's really hard to do on Ethereum, arguably impossible to do on Ethereum, but it's actually very trivial to do in this case, right? And then of course you can reveal, if for whatever reason you want to reveal your vote later, you could, but that's up to you as the user. So that's one thing that people are working on. Another thing that folks are working on is infrastructure for digital identity. Like the concept of self-sovereign identity, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with, but it's basically this concept of like, okay, take all the identity infrastructure we have today with like driver's licenses, passports and everything, and move that to the, not even Web3 world, just the digital world. But that really requires like, what you want ideally is a situation where you can reveal that, for example, you have a driver's license from Montana, in my case, but you don't want to reveal everything else, like the fact that I went or that I served in the military. So that it's very hard to do that in the traditional web. It's very hard to do that in something like Ethereum, where again, your account just has everything in it. But with Alio, you can construct a system up for self-sovereign identity. So if you want to authenticate to prove that, you know, like the silly example I like to use, like you want to prove you're old enough to get into a festival where there's, you know, alcohol is being served. You can prove you're 21 without revealing anything else on your driver's license, without revealing any other identity characteristic that you have or any other, you know, credential that you have. So that's one. Those are two things. And then finance, I think, is relatively obvious. And there's some different exchanges and different swap platforms that are being developed. So I won't linger on that too much because I think most people are familiar with a lot of those. And then the last one that's maybe a little bit more subtle, but I'm really excited about, is gaming. I think Web3 gaming is going to be, and I'm a gamer as a hobby, you know, speaking as a hobby, but I think Web3 gaming is going to change the gaming industry because for the first time, you can have player-owned games. We focus a lot on player-owned assets, right? So NFTs, I think that's kind of been the last wave we saw a lot of this NFT ownership in games. But I think one of the cool things about crypto is if you marry a DAO to a game, you can imagine playing a game where, you know, it's like players can define the rules of the game by vote, by some voting mechanism, right? And so the game can evolve over time depending on the community of players that are playing it. And that's like really important because it's not, that's not possible today. That's such a cool use of Web3 and gaming, a combination that I think
people. Yeah, I love the idea of being able to hard fork a game away from that jerk player who keeps cheating all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the thing that zero, like you might be asking, okay, well, what the hell does zero knowledge have to do with that? Well, with Ethereum, like the type of game that you can play is like chess, right? Where it's like, I see your board or I see your pieces, you see my pieces, we move. And it's an interesting game, but it's very hard to play a game like Battleship, right? Where it's like, again, based on the account model of all the smart contract blockchains that exist today, like it's no fun because I know where all your pieces are, right? It's transparent. So I guess I could not cheat if I didn't want to, but like, you know, the nice thing about zero knowledge cryptography and having this privacy by default is like, we can create Battleship type games. Or like a game where, you know, like Magic the Gathering, where it's like, you don't know what cards I'm holding and I'll play them one at a time. And that's like those types of games is just, I think, lead to much richer interactions. And so that's why I'm really excited about zero knowledge cryptography and Alio being a platform for Web3 gaming in the future.
Man, there's just so much there. You know, I've seen so many games already being built on platforms like Avalanche, even Ethereum. I guess one of my questions is like, is Alio an EVM compatible chain, you know, meaning can people just take their code from Ethereum and just say, okay, I'm going to now deploy it on Alio and it's going to run the same, just as, you know, just with, you know, a couple different, you know, configuration changes? Or is it completely, you know, ground up brand new stack, kind of like something like Solana, where it's not, EVM compatible?
Yeah, the short answer is I say it's closer to something like Solana. So we've built from the ground up. We have our own layer one chain. We have our own smart, kind of our equivalent of the EVM, which is called the AVM, which kind of manages the logic of contracts and transactions and transfers or interactions between them. And then we have a language called Leo that is basically how you as a developer write programs to deploy on the blockchain. And then we have kind of like the infrastructure on top, the explorers, the wallets that users mostly use to interact with that. So it's everything's from the ground up. We actually initially started the company looking at building as a layer two on Ethereum. And the short answer as to why not is that the way Ethereum was built at a low level was not, it wasn't built with this, with zero knowledge cryptography in mind. So the third word in that phrase should imply that there's like some deep, there's cryptographic stuff going on here that's different than the cryptography. Because of course, Ethereum uses cryptography, but the type of cryptography that Ethereum is really designed around is like signatures, right? So digital like signatures, and this concept of zero knowledge didn't really even exist when Ethereum was, or wasn't practical when Ethereum was being built. So we built everything from the ground up to enable that to be efficient, because it's not that efficient on Ethereum. So if you look at, there are some layer two rollups on Ethereum that use zero knowledge cryptography, but it's actually, I mean, we could have a whole podcast just about what ZK EVM means, because there's a very wide array of definitions. But I think the short answer is, like, the closer you get to replicating the EVM inside of zero knowledge proof, the more it costs. And so you end up with this performance trade-off that's very hard to break, which is why we decided to just go all the way on the other side and say, let's build our own platform. And just to be clear, my personal position is, like, I consider myself a member of the ETH community and the Bitcoin community. And
yeah, you and Pizza Mind are wearing the same t-shirts.
Yeah, I have an Ethereum Denver shirt. Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, like, my belief is that you're going to see a future that's multi-chain world, and you're going to have different ecosystems that kind of serve different user communities and different use cases. And I think I consider Aleo to be something that's different than Ethereum. You can do different stuff. Ethereum's great for certain things, in some ways, maybe better for certain things. But I think there's going to be this multi-chain world that I think will exist, as opposed to a single one ruling them all.
Yeah, definitely. At the beginning of the conversation, you mentioned working on the tokenomics for Aleo. Without giving away whatever you guys are doing over there, I just want to get your thoughts on tokenomics in general for Web3. What are some of the features that you think need to be included in these new projects going forward, either from the back of your mind, you know, in your VC days at A16Z, what you were looking for, or what do you think Web3 really enables in tokenomics going forward?
I think it's a great question. And my personal wish is that more mechanisms for long-term alignment get built. Like, one of my favorite mechanisms in like kind of the tokenomic space is, you know, there's a project called Synthetics that's been around for a while now. And one thing that they had, they didn't pioneer, but they were one of the first teams to kind of have this concept of yield farming. Right, where it's like you deposited your tokens, you know, inside of their ecosystem, you would get paid out in a token their native token, basically. But unlike many of the other yield projects that came after them, they had this concept of a lockup. So you got these tokens that were minted for you, but you weren't allowed to withdraw them for a year. And I thought that was a really cool and powerful mechanism to keep people interested in the project over the long term. I think that's unfortunately what a lot of DeFi projects ended up turning into were Ponzi-nomics, right? Whereas the idea was just like, just get a lot of people and farm it as much as you can. And then really, like, it just, the Ponzi pyramid collapsed on itself after a certain point. And unfortunately, a lot of cool ideas didn't go that far because they didn't have communities that were really long-term invested. And I think, to me, the alignment, long-term alignment is really, really key when it comes to designing an economic system in Web3.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Man, this has been awesome. Pete, do you have any kind of last questions before maybe I hop into some closing questions?
Yeah, I guess, you know, do we have any idea of when Aleo is going to launch their mainnet, or what's on your roadmap for the rest of 2022?
That's a great question.
Yeah, so we're really excited. We just announced the launch of our testnet 3, like I said, so people can run nodes today. They can write programs, and that's that just launched. And we're in phases, kind of adding features to that. And at the conclusion of those kind of these three phases, we'll have like the fully featured Alio network that will be a test net, but that will go kind of flow right into mainnet. So that to get to the answer of your question right up front, the goal for mainnet is end of year, maybe early next year, that time frame. It's always tricky. And having worked in this space for a while, it's always tricky to like put dates on these things because, you know, it's these are very complicated engineering endeavors that
they've been saying that they're going to do the Ethereum merge for like 3 years.
Even longer, I think. As long as I've been in this space, I feel like that's sort of been a thing. But like the reality, that the reason that's the case is because unlike traditional software, there's no do-overs. As we've seen with a lot of smart contracts out there that have gotten hacked for a lot of money, it just goes to show that you really need to be sure. And so that's why we've done, I think at this point, 4 or 5 audits. And I think we're going to schedule a couple more. I mean, because look, it's just, especially with these cryptographic protocols and especially these newer technologies like zero knowledge cryptography, you just really, really got to make sure it's bulletproof up in advance. But anyway, the goal is end of year or early next. And yeah, so right now the testnet, like I said, you can write programs, you can run nodes. In the next month or so, we're going to have provers, which will be able to participate in the network. And the way to think of, so Alio is a proof of stake blockchain, but it has a small proof of work component where people can generate zero knowledge proofs basically for the protocol and get paid for doing that in the same way that, you know, Bitcoin miners get paid for producing SHA-256 hashes. So that the reason we have that is to encourage the development of this technology from the hardware side. So provers will be able to basically generate proofs, earn Coinbase rewards for our network. And then the last step will be, we'll open it up, we'll let anyone be a validator, and we'll have a fully decentralized network. And then again, that'll be the last step before mainnet. So of course, I think me and the whole team have a busy next few months. Like the closer you get to mainnet, the more you have to do. It just kind of goes up exponentially. But yeah, we're very excited because I think this is like, there's never, maybe just to my last point, is there's never been yet a system that relied on only cryptography, not any kind of hardware privacy, but only using cryptography to enable privacy that enabled you to do general programs, like anything you want. Like Zcash is like, you could actually think of Alio as like a follow on to Zcash, where Zcash has one program it runs, right? The transfer program. In Alio, you can take that and do any program. And no one's ever done that before without the assistance of like specialized hardware. And so it's something that I'm really excited about, that the team's really excited about, that the team, and honestly, got to give credit to the guys who founded this company, Howard Wu, Colin Chin, Ray Chu, Mike Beller. You know, they were working in research for years, even before they started this. And it's really a realization of, at this point, I mean, almost a decade of intellectual effort.
I love it. No, it's like, these are the guys that are like, studying crypto before crypto was a thing. You know, it's like when it meant just cryptography, not cryptocurrency.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. So you mentioned you don't need any kind of specialized hardware. You can just run this on a good desktop computer or a gaming rig.
That's right.
That's amazing. So when Testnet 3 is deployed, we can just start getting involved and setting up nodes and right now?
Yeah. So I mean, as everybody probably, you know, as every project comes on your show probably says at this point, go to the Discord. That's the place to learn everything. And so yes, I can share some links to our homepage, our Discord, our Twitter, and like all the community links. And it's pretty easy to onboard from there and learn how to run a node, learn how to write a program, and do different stuff. But yeah, that's really the thing we want to encourage people to do is really the programs, write programs, interact with programs, play around with it, get a sense, because this is like a new model that it's never existed before. Just like people didn't really know what to do with Ethereum when it first came out. I still believe, I mean, I mentioned a bunch of use cases. There's probably a dozen more use cases that we haven't even dreamed of yet that I'm really excited to see what people do.
Love it. Now, Alex, we got some closing questions that we like to ask kind of everybody that comes on the show. Some softballs just to close things out, a little cool down stretch after a high intensity workout here. But
a great conversation.
Good. I'm glad you enjoy it. I'm glad you enjoy it. Tell us a little bit about, you know, one character in the crypto space that you admire, maybe somebody that's challenged you intellectually or helped you become a better manager. Who's kind of one person you'd give a shout out to?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many amazing people in this space, as you pointed out. Yeah, the breadth of folks that enter in. So it's, I have to really think about a single person, but I think at A16Z, the head of the fund was a gentleman named Chris Dixon. Me and Chris were very different people. I mean, Chris has been like an intellectual for a long time and worked in tech, and then he was a VC, and he's kind of just that's been his life. And I of course came into A16Z. My last job had been basically as an army officer. And so we kind of were on different wavelengths, but I really learned the thing that I learned from him a lot is to challenge assumptions, right? It's easy to go into conversations or pitches with these preconceived assumptions about what something should be. And, you know, he was always very careful to not hold those too tightly. And then the other thing is, I guess maybe this is like a corollary to that is there's a concept in VC of like strong principles, weakly held, right? Where it's like, once you get new information about how something might be different, like you don't hold on to things just because it was the way that you were used to, right? You switch, you kind of are able to shift your view and be relatively nimble as an intellectual. And I think, you know, that's something that I learned from Chris and I saw Chris kind of do day in and day out. And so I think Chris is one of the foremost intellectuals in the space, certainly among like the VC community. Like he was the one who got into Bitcoin back when everyone else in Silicon Valley thought it was crazy. And so he obviously led the way there, but yeah, he's someone who definitely influenced me and who I am today.
That's awesome. A16Z is definitely the VC that we kind of look at when they invest in something, our heads kind of turn and go, really, we need to pay attention.
Yeah. So, we mentioned a bunch of investors, but they're also investors in Aleo. I think they led our Series A actually. So it's important. I wanted to mention that.
Amazing. And for those listening to this podcast for the very first time, can you share some words of wisdom for someone just getting into the space today?
Absolutely. And I said it at the very beginning, but I would say, don't be intimidated. Again, I'm a person, I didn't even know how to code. When I walked into the Stanford cryptography class that I told you about, and I didn't even know how to write a program. It was a master's level computer science class. And then of course, you know, you can imagine what that experience is like. You're ballsy, dude. It's ballsy or stupid, one of the two. I don't know. I wouldn't recommend people to do that. But the point is, I would say it's easy in the space to be intimidated because it feels like everyone is smarter than you. I mean, I still feel that way. But I think the thing that I would encourage everyone to do is just roll up your sleeves and try and take a little bite every day. Try and learn one new thing. Try and push yourself a little bit to like get some new knowledge, and don't be content with someone just telling you. Go and try and learn it yourself from first principles. And that can be whether it's like learning to write a smart contract, you know, thinking about some of these token economic designs, getting smart on maybe some of the math, or even just like any aspect of it you want. There's no end to the rabbit hole, but I would really encourage you to try and go from first principles up. And it's going to be slow at first, but if you start little by little, you'll be amazed at how much you can learn. It's truly amazed. I mean, again, after 5 years, I mean, 5 years is no time in the grand scheme of things, but that's how long really I've been digging deep into this space. And I feel like I look around, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. It's like kind of like if you climb a mountain, you're climbing, you're like, man, this sucks. I'm tired. I'm sweating. I'm out of breath. Yeah. And you turn around and you're like, holy crap, I can see everything. You know, look how far we've come. Exactly. So that's what I would tell anyone listening to this podcast who's maybe just first coming into the space.
Man, I love it. Alex, I think that is just the perfect note to end this on. We've been going for 46 minutes, and I think that this was just an amazing, amazing podcast. I love your energy. I hope that we could have you back again sometime soon. I mean, you know, we got plenty of, roadmap milestones to check off, and you'll come back and give us some updates, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, hopefully it won't be like the Ethereum merge and 3 years later you have me on again. But no,
you got a gray beard by that time.
Well, if it's 3 years from now, very likely. Anyway, no, thanks, guys. This is a ton of fun. I love the conversation. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, take care. And everybody who's at home listening, stick around for later this week. We're going to have some more guests coming your way.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.